I am Carol, Carol, Gaines, Gaines.
And what is your proper title?
Carol. In the military, of course, you go by whatever rank that you have. In the civilian world, especially in the Southwest, it's first name, and that troubles me a little bit because with children, I'm not one of your buddies. I'm an adult, and I will help you along. But so, Mrs. Gaines, it was when I was always when I worked. And now when I meet children, it still is Mrs. Gaines. But to friends, it's Carol.
And what rank did you exit the military with?
I am a captain.
All right.
And the thing is, now everybody says, there is a new national program called I Am Not Invisible. We had a visit from the public relations man from the Department of New Mexico Veterans Service, and he was all around the state. It's a national program getting ready for Women Veteran Day, the 12th of June. And he had a little something for us to say, and we all ended with, I am not invisible. I am a Marine. And we had a Navy, Karen Woods, who did it here. And then he sent us how it's going to come out yesterday, and there were even the... shouldn't say even the woman now who is head of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Service is an Air Force veteran retired.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, let's go back a bit.
Okay.
I'd like to know what kind of kid you were, and did you have a military history in your family?
My mother was a single. I grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin, right on Lake Superior. My mother was a single parent. And so we lived with grandparents who were had emigrated from Poland at the turn of the century. So I always lived in an adult household. I'm a single. I don't have any brothers or sisters. So I always lived in an adult household with grandparents who grandpa spoke probably five or six languages. And I spoke Polish as a child. But when you grow up, I don't do that. I can't do that anymore. So I went to school in northern Wisconsin. I have two family members who were military, both of them World War II. My mother had one brother who was in the Army, went from northern Wisconsin to Texas for training. Couldn't understand Texas at all. It was hot, dry compared to northern Wisconsin. And he went then World War II to Africa, and then through Sicily up into Italy. Unfortunately, was wounded, got a Purple Heart. And then my dad's side of the family, there was an uncle, his brother, who was also in the Army, World War II. So I listened to them and listened to their stories, but for me it was stories that didn't seem real as a mm-hmm. child. And then I grew up and found out there was a military.
At what age did you start thinking about that as a path for yourself?
Probably after I went to school, in grade school, high school in my town, also the college in my town. And after high school, a number of friends joined, no women that I knew of, but a lot of the high school kids then joined the military. And I thought, how come not women? So that just kind of sat with me. And then when my mother said in college, Carol, you will have a profession. Yes, mother. So she was a teacher by then. By profession, I'm a high school English teacher. And I thought, I didn't really want to grade papers. I didn't want to decorate the classroom. I didn't, at that time, if any dealings with parents, the student was in trouble. Not now so much. But I thought, I picked up a flyer from the Marines, and after the grandparents died, I was a lady of the household because my mother was off working. So I looked at the flyer, and I thought, I can do that, and I can do that, and I know that. And so I talked to my mom. By then, I was 19 or 20. I had to get permission to do that. So I picked up a flyer and met the recruiter, and I went to officer training. At that time, it was called PLC, Platoon Leaders Class, which is like an ROTC. during the summer, I went to Quantico, and it was a really big deal to go from small town Wisconsin to Washington, D.C. And the military and the Marines sent me a ticket to go by bus from my small town to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which was probably a four-hour drive. They got on an airplane and went to Washington, D.C., to the airport. They picked us up and went to Quantico, which was about 35 miles south of Washington, D.C.
Before we hear about your training there, I was just curious, did you consider any of the other branches?
I did not. Once I picked up the Marines, I thought, they're special. That's what I want to be.
So once you arrived in D.C. then?
Well, training for a Marine is always tough, but I am a determined woman, young at the time, but I thought, if I signed up, I can do this. So for 6 weeks, you learn to follow orders, whether you liked it or not. You learn to dress properly. You learned how to be self-reliant. You learned how to get along with others. We lived in an open, what we call a barracks. I had the top bunk. And the woman below, who had the bunk below me, was 6 feet two. Mm-hmm. And I had to climb up the back of the bed to get up into bed at night and get down in the morning without, remember, don't fall out. So we did classroom work, we did drill, we did marching most places that we went, and you learned what it was to be in the military.
And how many women were present during that time?
I would guess there probably were close to 100 of us. Mm-hmm. Some lasted a week, decided that was not for them, and they left to go back. By the second summer, you were you had already done the first class. You went between the summers at college, sophomore, junior, senior. Then there was another group, and some of the same people, women, were there from the first unit to the second one. And so, of course, we were friends again, and you could go through all at one time if you waited till after you were commissioned. And I did it in three sessions. I went one summer, the second summer, and after college, then I was commissioned, and I decided I am a Marine.
What was the hardest part about basic training?
Boot camp for officers, we trained separately from the men. At that time, women enlisted trained separately from men. Mm-hmm. Now women officers go to what is called the basic school. Mm-hmm. And women and men still train at Parris Island, mm-hmm. South Carolina.
What was the toughest part of that training for you?
Well, at the time, I was not an athletic woman. But I certainly learned to run. I certainly learned to follow orders when we were out marching. You better know which foot you are to step off on. What do I say? Mm-hmm. Classes were different. You learned all military history. You learned Marine history. You learned all of the rank. You learned what responsibility was, what you were expected to do. And it was rather overwhelming. This is going to happen in 6 weeks and then happen in another 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But when you went home, you had a chance to take those papers and you studied them over the course of the year while you were at home. And then when you were commissioned, you were of a new mindset that now I can handle Marine.
So what was the next transition for you?
Well, when you get out of the last session of officer training, where would you like to go on your assignment? Well, I'm from northern Wisconsin, and there are Marines in California, and I thought, wouldn't that be wonderful to go from winter to California sun? Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen. I moved from one building, a couple buildings down, and I was part of the Women Marine Company, which there are probably 250 women in the company. And my first job was teaching, although I didn't think I wanted to do that. The teaching in a military classroom versus teaching in a civilian classroom are day and night. You will learn, you will not sleep, you will pay attention, you will pass the test. Teaching was easy. Mm-hmm. Had it been that way, I probably would have stayed in the civilian mm-hmm. world, but it didn't happen that way. So I did that for about a year. Met a lot of people, learned to do all different kinds of things. Being a Marine officer, you're a step you're a second lieutenant, so you get some of the jobs that, oh, we got a new second lieutenant. You can do that and you can do that. You had to travel here, travel there. I did not have a car. We did not have a car in my home, my mother, until college. I graduated college. Then she bought a car. I graduated in May, and she graduated from college, having gone summer for many years, and she graduated in August, bought a car, and then I left. So I bought a car because I found out the base at Quantico was very large. You had to wait and order a military vehicle to take you someplace. It took forever. So I bought a car, and that was a really big deal. My uncle had taught me to drive. I bought insurance, and off I went. The hardest part, I guess, learning how many different facets there are to being an officer. Rank has its responsibilities. Rank has its privileges. And you will abide by them because you're now a Marine officer.
What was it like being a female officer?
Interesting, exciting, sometimes difficult. I am an extrovert, so I don't have trouble talking to someone. Whether you were enlisted from a private PFC, corporal all up the rank till a senior enlisted, and then the same with officers. You had people of your own rank that you got along with, and you taught each other things that were coming. And then you had the senior officers that the proper answer was, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am.
Did you have much of a social life?
Yes. After I got a car, I was entranced to go from Quantico to Washington, D.C., was about 36 miles. And to be in the nation's capital was a place that I had only thought that I would ever get there. So with a couple other friends, we would take turns driving, and we would go to the Smithsonian, and then we would go to the White House, and we would go to find a restaurant, then we would go to Lincoln Memorial. We did as much sightseeing as we could because we knew that once you leave, you may not come back to Washington, D.C. for a long time. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed that part of it.
And so where all did you serve?
Well, let me do one thing first. Of course, pay scales were very different then than now, but I grew up poor, so you wore a uniform. So once you bought your set of uniforms, winter and summer, dress and every day, the money you had, you could spend on yourself. So I made $222 a month. Thought I was wonderful. Thought I was rich. Mm-hmm. I had more than enough to pay all my expenses. Mm. So that was fun.
That must have felt really good.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Have my own checking account and put my check in my checking account. Makes me laugh now.
Well, it is. It is just funny to think of. But you've seen a lot of changes. How long did you serve in the Marine Corps?
Well, I went in fall, September of 1958. I graduated in May and went in September of 1958. I was in Quantico for about a year and a half, got transferred to Washington, D.C., and I left the Marine Corps in February of 1964. So when I got transferred to Washington, D.C., I worked in a security office. I worked in the education office. If you were in the military, Uncle Sam would help. The military would help you pay half of your tuition, and was my job to make sure that the school they had chosen or other kind of schools, if you wanted to learn welding or if you wanted to do something else, it was my job to make sure that they were certified, that you really were going to get a degree and could get a job. And then I was assigned to the Women Marine Company's executive officer, which was like second to the commander, the one who was in charge. Mm-hmm. You got all kinds of things to do because you were of the lower rank. I did that for about a year and a half, and then I was promoted to captain and did that for about a year and a half.
What was factored into your decision to leave the service?
Well, had I gotten a different position, had I been assigned someplace else, I probably would have stayed because I like being a Marine. I like the variety of jobs that you could do. I like the different places that you could go. But I had worked with women all of this time, and I thought, all those Marines out there, and I haven't had a different job. And I had orders to go to Parris Island, South Carolina, to train recruits, and I would have been probably that teacher again. I didn't know it, but I was probably good at it. I was good at it at the time, but I didn't want to do that again. So I decided that I would leave the service. And with a friend, I was in during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was 1962. I lived in a house with two other military, one military woman and one civilian woman, and the military woman was part of Navy communication, and when Cuban Crisis came about, 16th of October 1962, she went to work, and she was gone for a week. Carol, will you bring me a clean uniform? Will you bring me some clean clothes? They stayed in the office where they were because it was such a dangerous situation. Cuba, along with the Soviet Union, had missiles that were aimed at Washington, D.C., and different places in the United States. So she did not come home. I brought her clothes. We were all on high alert. Fortunately, that only lasted just less than 2 weeks. President Kennedy decided to diplomacy was better than military force. They blockaded Cuba so no more missiles would come into, and Khrushchev and Kennedy came to an agreement that if they would disarm and take their missiles out, we would do the same in Turkey because we had Turkey aim missiles there aimed at the Soviet Union. So it came to a close with both of them would said they would do what they were going to do, and that was a Cold War, even though later or earlier Korea was a hot war, Vietnam was a hot war, but this was called the Cold War against communism. So, but I decided I didn't want to go to train recruits, so I got out. So the woman who had been in with the communications, she and I decided, let's go to Europe. I had saved my money, and I had three things that I really wanted to do. I really had a dream. I wanted curly hair. Well, I have straight hair.
Me
but
too.
I wanted curly hair. Got a permanent.
Me too. And it didn't work out so well. Oh, well.
Me too. Oh, well. And then I wanted to have a convertible. And when I had gotten promoted to captain, I bought a Carmen Ghia convertible and thought I was Miss Wonderful. And then I wanted to travel. I really wanted to go to Europe. So I did the curly hair, bought a convertible, and then Diane and I were going to travel. So we went to Europe by ship. And it was wonderful to travel across the ocean by ship. A German ship landed in Germany. I sold my Ghia in New York, got good money for it, traveled by ship. A family invited us from that we had met on the ship to come to their house. So we went to their house for 2 days. She said, oh, come stay with us. This was in Hamburg, Germany. And the son had a bug for sale. So left my Ghia, bought a bug, and Diane and I started our travel all around the United, all around. Went to France, went to Germany, went to Italy, went to Austria. And it got to be closer to December, Christmas time, and Diana said, I really want to go home. Well, I still had money, and I didn't want to go home yet. So while I was in Washington, D.C., there was a new theater. A Marine started a new theater group, and I thought, what better way to meet people than to be in the theater? Because you could meet people of all different ranks, of all different civilians, different, you know, anybody could come. So when I got out of the service and I traveled to Europe, and he found my address and sent me a letter, and so he said, why don't you come to Ethiopia? And I thought, Ethiopia? Well, every embassy around the world has Marines guarding the embassy. And he was in Ethiopia. And I talked with my mother, and she said, well, you still want to travel. Why don't you go? So I did. And I'm happy to say, well, I got there a couple of days before Christmas. Emperor Haile Selassie invites the American community to come sing Christmas carols. So we sang Christmas. There were probably 25 of us sang Christmas carols, and then we all had lined up and had a chance to meet the emperor. So as when it was my turn, there was the ambassador who was there, the translator from Amharic language into English and English back again for the, Amharic back for the embassy, to the emperor. The whole time he is holding my hand, to hold the hand of the emperor. And when he nodded to me, that was my cue to back away, and then I could turn and walk away. Well, behind me was the Marine. The emperor held his hand, nodded, and Bob got no conversation. He never quite forgave me for that I got to hold the emperor's hand.
He wasn't as cute as you.
Oh, or the interesting story that came along. So Ethiopia was interesting, loved the people, loved the countryside, but after about 18 months, he got transferred to Jordan, to the Holy Land. So loved the time while we were there because we could see we were Catholic, got married in an Italian Catholic mm-hmm. church. And then we had a chance to travel around the Holy Land, especially to go to Jerusalem, Bethlehem while we were there. And had our first daughter while we were there he was a Catholic doctor who had his own hospital. I had a daughter, Lucy, there, and she, because she was born in Jordan, she had dual citizenship. So when we got transferred back to the United States after about a year and a half, he only had about a year and a half to do in 20 years. He went to Camp Pendleton, retired. Where were we going to go? Well, someplace new where we hadn't been. So he went to the library, and it had to have near a military base, we ended up in Portales, New Mexico, near a military base, had on-campus housing, had a department that he wanted, it had everything. So we were in Portales while he finished a bachelor's and master's. Where were we going to go to get a job teaching?
And were you, when you, is that Cannon?
Yes, Cannon Air Force Base. We were very happy there. It was a smaller town because we didn't want to be in a big place. The university theater department had two good, very good instructors, and it was a good time.
Did a bit of theater there myself, too, yes.
Oh, did you too? Yes. Oh, yes. I can't remember his name now. Dean. Oh, I can't remember his name.
And
it's been too long.
Well, when were you there?
69 to 71.
Okay, well, that was before I came along, so.
Yeah, but anyway, so where were we going to get a job? So he had figured Albuquerque, but the last summer vacation, summer school, he had tried out, had gone when they had sent people, we're looking for teachers here and here and there. We met the man who started Coez Bookstore, Patrick Beckett. Mm-hmm. He was a Marine, Bob was a Marine, I was a Marine. We had instant family. And he said, you got to come to Las Cruces. Well, there were only two high schools, no positions. Well, the last 2 weeks before summer school was out, 2 weeks, he got a telephone call from the principal at Las Cruces High School. Can you teach English? Yes, sir. Can you teach speech? Yes, sir. Can you teach theater? Yes, sir. Can you be here in 2 weeks? Yes, sir. So that's how we came to Las Cruces, and he taught at Cruces High for 20 years.
Did you ever go back to teaching?
Yes, I did. I had gone to school with an English, and then I wanted to do library. So I did here when we got here. I did a minor in library because they had it at that time, and I worked at a Catholic school for 20 years as librarian. And you teach every class that comes in. The kindergarten comes in, and that's your one vocabulary. And when the eighth graders come in, that's a different assignment, a different vocabulary.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but when you speak of your time in the Marine Corps, it sounds like it was pretty easy for you, and you had a lot more adventures after you got out of the Marine Corps.
Well, in the military, when you're in the military, you're in the military, and what you do is regulated by the military. But I fit into that. But perhaps if I had stayed longer, but I made that decision mm-hmm. to get out.
Mm-hmm. And to this day, though, you're very committed to
yes, I am.
The Marine Corps and the military in general.
When we moved to Las Cruces, we had two little children at the time. Rob was born while we were in Portales. But we had a family to raise. Bob was busy working, so I was a stay-at-home mom. But then I always wanted to help women veterans, and I realized, especially the World War II women, said, well, I didn't really do anything, mm-hmm. but some of them were of an age. They needed medical help. They needed with prescriptions. They needed, how can I buy a house? How, you know, what to do? So that was something that I started probably, within probably 5 years of living here. So I've always helped women veterans, which has been something that I have wanted to do. And so it used to be kind of a social group. We met for lunch, and if somebody needed help, they would ask me, and I would help them with that. And then I thought, after this, we really need to get organized. And so that's how I got, let's get organized. And there were a group of us who got together. I wanted to build we had Veterans Park here by that time. I wanted to have something to honor those World War II women. So getting organized as a 501c3, we became United Military Women of the Southwest. We went to Santa Fe to see if we could get some money, and yes, we did. And that was my dream, to build the Women Veteran Monument at Veterans Park. And it is there now. Unfortunately, there was some problem with the electricity. The pandemic hit. The Park Service could not get in easily because everything was closed. The statues had to be removed because the problem was underneath the statues with the electric. So the statues have now been removed, are in safekeeping. And the wall has been repaired that needed some help. And now, with the pandemic, it's been hard for the city to get in, but we're impatiently waiting for the electric to be completed, the new platform put back in, the statues reinstalled. Hopefully, I don't know when, but hopefully soon. Then we'll feel our monument truly is complete. We had a dedication, and that's been 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago now. So we really are anxious to get it done.
Will there be another maybe rededication when it's restored?
Yes, we want to do that. So as soon as we get the okay and that it's inspected, we will plan another one of those to have a rededication. Everybody come look and see what's happened. They are to be lit at night, and the problem was they were not being lit. One part would do, and another statue would be lit, but not all six of them. Mm-hmm. Army, Marine, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the woman in the front is the National Guard one. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we honor those women who are serving now.
How would you say things have changed for women in the military since the time you served?
Well, what I've said, I worked with women most of the time. That was not common with everybody. When I was in Washington, D.C., the women worked in many jobs at headquarters, Marine Corps. They worked at Marine Corps Institute, which was like a correspondence area. They worked, senior enlisted officers worked at the White House, worked at the Pentagon, did all kinds of things. But it was mostly, you were judged as a woman. Now, women are serving. When I was in, you were not allowed, and it only probably 20 years ago, that you could serve in a battle situation. Now the women are on the front line because there doesn't seem to be a front line anymore like it was years ago. So women are now in the front line. When I was in, there was one woman in my command who went overseas. She was the Vietnam era. I am that era. And she was supposedly going into communications. Well, we all knew she was not in communications. She was intelligence. But you went under a false pretense, but she was able to do what she could go there then. But now women serve right alongside men much more easily than in my time.
Does that make you proud, optimistic?
Again, to be in the military, you have to be a special kind of person, whether you are a man or whether you are a woman. You learn to adapt where you are, what you can do, what your ability is. If you have those traits, you serve side by side without a problem. If you have a problem with some of those, then it is a problem. And then you probably change jobs or are assigned someplace else. You probably will serve one tour and get out because the military didn't suit it, and it didn't suit you. Mm-hmm. But those who tend to stay longer are a special person.
What advice would you give young people today about military service?
Oh, I think military is underrated. When I showed the program to my mother, she said, You'll always have a job. You'll always get a paycheck. You'll always have a place to stay. Go someplace interesting so I can visit you. Sometimes I have a soapbox, and my soapbox says, after high school, I think every student out of high school, even if you're handicapped, you can always answer their phone someplace. You can do paperwork. I think everyone should do a national service. We have lost that. When we were in World War I, World War II, Korea, problems started in Vietnam. We supported the war effort. Now only 1% of our youth join the military. But I think if we had national service, you would not have to necessarily be in the military. You could join the Peace Corps. You could do work in the Appalachia. You could work in the Park Service. You could do so many different jobs. And if you were from New Mexico, maybe we'd send you to, I don't know, Vermont, and Vermont to Georgia, and Georgia to Utah. And I think to have young people see our wonderful country, they would learn to appreciate it more.
Tell me about your service in the Honor Guard.
There is a national organization called Marine Corps League. Anyone who's been a Marine can join Marine Corps League unless you have a dishonorable discharge. But our Marine Corps League has been here since 1981. Both Bob and I were charter members. And one of the things that the Marines do, Toys for Tots is one of them. We place flags on the grave sites. The other is the Honor Guard. It is a special group you volunteer for, buy your own uniforms, to do the final military honors for any veteran. We do honors for every veteran, not just the Marines. We do them in churches. We do the cemeteries. We have done them at the park. You have to have the special military form, a discharge certificate, a DD-214. Your family presents it at the funeral home. The funeral home will call us and arrange a time and a date for us. And we come. We do the folding of the flag, presentation to the family. We do the final rifle volleys and the playing of taps. When I'm standing with the flag most of the time, I can visibly see the families. They may cry a little, but their shoulders go down. They know their loved one has had the final military honors that they deserved and have received. It's quite an emotional time every time I go, and I've been doing this for almost 10 years now, and I will continue to do.
How many funerals per month do you attend?
Well, it depends when people die. In the pandemic, we have had many more where there are so few World War II funerals we do now because most of those men and women have now died. We still do Korea, again, fewer of them because Korea was the 1950s. This is now 2021. We do many Vietnam. Unfortunately, some of them, Agent Orange, death. Mm-hmm. And now Desert Storm. So in a month, when the pandemic started, we could not do military honors because you could not meet, you could not go out, you could not be in groups. So we didn't do funerals, military honors at funerals for probably 6 months. But the funeral homes kept track of how many families wanted to have military honors. And after we're now allowed to go back to cemeteries, churches, wherever, we did all of those honors for those veterans who had died that the families wanted them. So some months we probably do 30, some months we probably only do 10, 15.
It sounds like quite a commitment, though.
Yes, it is, and we do it volunteer. Mm-hmm. We probably have 25 who are in the Honor Guard, and on an average, it depends on everybody's schedule, but those who volunteer are dedicated. And we all try to go to as many as we can. Sometimes we're 6 or 8. Sometimes we're 12 to 15 at a funeral.
And obviously, at one point, you were in that position, receiving that flag.
Yes, I was. My husband has died. It's been now 6 years. And that was one of the hardest things that I've had to do, is to be the receiver of the flag. And as it turns out, the officer who was there is from Las Cruces. He went to Las Cruces High School, and he was a student of Marine Gaines, Bob Gaines. His father is part of the Honor Guard, and that Marine is now a Brigadier General.
Oh.
But when he was here to be the receiver of that flag, we could not look one another in the eye, because we both would have had a very a more emotional moment than we did. But the Marines were there to do military honors. We went to El Paso. Bob is buried at Fort Bliss. And as Marines are shooters, he's buried in an ammo box. We put some things inside the ammo box, some family things, his rank, his picture of him in the ammo box. And the Marines came down and did honors again for him. And while we were standing there, when after they bury, you're allowed then to go back, I said to my daughter and our son standing next to me, I want to be buried next to my Marine husband. And the woman from the cemetery heard me and said, if you get me your discharge certificate within 24 hours, I will save that gravesite for you. So now when I go down, Bob is buried there, and there is an empty place next to him, which will be my place.
Okay, give me a moment.
Sure, yes, yes, yes.
Give me just a moment.
Oh. Well, I talked a lot. You're going to have some editing to do.
Well, and we are approaching our allotted time for the day. And, of course, I just want to remind you, this isn't an official StoryCorps interview. But I just wanted to bring you back because you came in a couple of different times, once to interview Korean War veteran George George.
Yeah.
I'll always remember him.
You want to hear about him?
Not yet, but you also came back to talk with Karen Woods about, you know, service of women in the military. And through both of those times, I thought to myself as I was listening, well, I kind of want to know more about Carol's time in the service and about her life. And so thank you very much for allowing me to speak with you today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I talked a lot, so you will have some editing to do.
Well, of course. And you asked, did I want to hear about George? Is there some
development? George has been calling me. He's had a downward trend. He said, I've been falling a couple of times. I can't seem to think properly. He was married many years ago and had, I think, two children. Wife died, and he married again, and now she has died probably 3 years ago. And so the daughter and then the stepdaughter have been keeping track of him, call him all the time. And he spent a lot of time in California, but he has a daughter who is in Alaska. And two of them came, the daughter and granddaughter came, helped him pack up everything he has. George, take what you want with you. And he is now in Alaska as of last week, as of Thursday.
Wow.
So he's planning to stay there through the summer. He said, I want to know my daughter again and the children. And when he called me yesterday, and I said, George, where are you? And he said, well, I'm in Alaska, about 200 miles north of Anchorage. So he must be almost in Nome.
Wow.
So he's going to be there. And then he said, I don't want to live with anybody. I want to have my own apartment. So they have put his things now in storage, and after when he gets back to California, Northern California, I think Sacramento area, he'll stay with them for a little, and then they'll help him decide, do you think you can live on your own, or do you think the need to live with us, or do you want to go to an assisted living place or something? So George says, I got to think about that. He's still a little bit, he's still ornery.
Well, good. Best to him. And Carol, I guess unless there's anything else that you think that I have neglected to ask, because you might have some other things on your mind that you want to be sure to share.
Okay, I'm a list maker, so of course I made myself a list. So if you can hold on just 1 second, I will. I did that. We did that. I think we did that. Oh, I didn't say when we were in Amman. I had Lucy there, our daughter Lucy, and we used to go to morning church, which was just about a block from where we lived. The Marine house was on one side of the street. The apartment we lived was on the other side, and we would walk over to church. And sure enough, we saw this man there, sometimes by himself, sometimes with a wife. And the priest who was there said, oh, I want to introduce you. Bob and I got to meet King Hussein of Jordan.
Hmm.
It was called, years ago, it was called Transjordan. So, but then he was king for about 35 years.
Uh-huh.
So we had a chance to shake hands with the king. It was pretty exciting.
If any of the places that you visited, which would be the one that you would go back to?
Well, unfortunately, now I know too much. Ethiopia was wonderful. The people were gentle, wonderful. We love going to the market. We love going to sightseeing, and then so much because it's part of the world I had never been. You can always get to the Middle East. You can always get to Jordan, but you can't always get to Africa with the world the way it is now. And unfortunately, Ethiopia's been taken over mostly by Russia, mm-hmm. and so it is a militaristic country now that it was not when, sadly.
Yeah.
I guess I'll close with, I'm Carol Gaines, I am a Marine. Semper Fidelis, always faithful. Hoorah. I guess one other thing I wanted to say, we talked about United Military Women of the Southwest, and can I give them a plug?
Oh, of course.
United Military Women of the Southwest is a group of any military women, all ages, all services. And we used to meet for meetings, but with the pandemic, things have been only Zoom. And so it's not as active as we want to be, so we're looking forward to being out again where we can really meet people. During the pandemic, we've had a number of calls from military women. I don't have enough money to meet my mortgage. Can you help me with a little? Mm-hmm. I've run out of gas. Can you help? They needed money here and there. So over the years, we've had fundraisers. We sponsor a bingo, which brings in some money. We set up a farmer's market. We do a bingo. The money that we earn at bingo goes to Community of Hope and to the soup kitchen. We go to TRC, to the veterans' home. There are women veterans there. But right now, for this time, as everything has been on hold. But we hope to get back there again.
Well, good luck to you all. Best wishes. I'm sure you'll be, you'll be back in, I won't say no time.
Sometime soon.
Because everything is so unpredictable these days.
Yes.
But take care of yourself. And thank you again, Carol, for chatting with me today.
Well, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I gave you more work to edit. I'm sure you'll let me know when you're ready.